chief. Yes, but I will speak with several of my colleagues. We are excited by recent data from Chandra and XMM. And I will show some of the data which are not so beautiful spectra as Chandra, for example, is getting from the nearby stars, which is really great resolution and so on. Data on clusters of galaxies are not so beautiful because in some brightest lines, Chandra is getting only 6 photons or 7 photons. And reflecting grating spectrometer on XMM Newton due to much higher effective surface area is getting hundreds of photons in each line, and therefore it is already very good. Yesterday we had at Caltech a conversation, and I asked people what is the future with Constellation X, and people, MIT people explained to me that effective surface area will be 350 times higher than on XMM and maybe thousands times more than for Chandra. And in 2005, Astro-E, next Japanese spacecraft, will be flown with microcalorimeters. And I just came back from the two exciting CMB labs here. And person is in the room who is himself, one graduate student who is creating bolometers. Just one person. For me, this was also something unbelievable. I saw that only such labs as JPL or Able or Berkeley are able to produce good bolometers today, but life is changing. And Japanese and Goddard will launch X-ray calorimeters, which are cooled down for 100 millikelvin or Kelvin. And they will be able to measure the X-ray line width with precision of the order of 6-7 electron volts, for example, at 6.7 keV line. And this is already, we will be able to see the broadening of the line and many other things. Additional exciting development during last 2 years is the return of Enrico Costa of Frascati to idea of photoelectric polarimetry. And at least in the lab, they created the X-ray polarimeter, which is able to measure polarization due to the photo effect. Electron is coming, and photoelectron, they are able to detect what is the direction of photoelectron, and they are measured then what is the degree of polarization. And before, with all Bragg crystals, with everything in space, we were able to dream only to observe polarization from brightest black holes. Now, practically any AGN, it's important for you, Amar, maybe, it will be possible to measure X-ray polarization. And I think if it will be ready, I think that Constellation X will take it. If it will be really 90% efficiency instrument, it is tremendous. People in NASA understand this. Question is, how reliable is it? Is it possible to produce for space? And then there is XUS. It's possible to launch even this small mission because mirrors are now, technology of X-ray mirrors is, you know, practically in every house. It's easy to do. Next, yes, it's true. And therefore, there are people who are proposing now several X-ray missions. And they wrote letters to us with Eugene Churazov asking, is it possible to find additional problems for X-ray polarimetry? And we immediately told, certainly it is X-ray lines from the clusters of galaxies where a lot of science will come, and it's extremely easy problem to compute. And yesterday evening, just before this talk, I wrote to my colleagues that I wish to speak about this, and they immediately told, okay, tomorrow paper will be on AstroPH. It is there. Therefore, I am free to speak. This is image.
I thought the timing was pretty remarkable.
Yes. You told me, I pushed, the paper appeared. And yesterday, additional story that yesterday my daughter was copying the pictures on the huge machine at Caltech, making transparencies for me, and she finally broke it so that nobody was able to repair. We came here with 17 pictures for transparency. Fortunately, your machine was is okay. It was not broken also. This is image of M87, which was obtained with XMM Newton. It's I can show you different image, but I don't like to show it, but where you can see on the same image where it is possible to resolve every knot of M87 jet in X-rays. But this different subject, I wish to show you that it's possible to observe it very fast, this field of view. It's 40 arc minutes to 40 arc minutes, epic camera, on which designed by Trumper and his team, and you see how huge field is possible to observe. And this in reality is 20 or 30, I think, core radii for M87, for this giant elliptical galaxy now very rather close for us, with black hole in the center, which has mass of the order of 2 billion solar masses, which is measured by Hubble Space Telescope. Therefore, it's very interesting object. But much more interesting for me is this result from EPIC, which is in the first issue of XMM result, and Hans Böhringer published this spectra. And you see observations from 25 internal quarter of arc minute up to 12 arc minute, and spectra from point, in reality they have spectra from 0.1 up to 10 keV. And you see the spectra with a lot of lines here. And this is well-known iron, helium-like iron line. Data are coming and coming, but there were several sensations in this result from XMM. First sensation was that they detected fall of the temperature to what center of the cluster. This beginning of cooling flow, everybody was speaking about cooling flow maybe 10 or 15 years. And main XMM result is the following. There is no gas in the center of M87 with temperature below 1.3 million Kelvin, 1.3 keV. If this cooling flows, then we should observe 0.8 keV, 0.5 keV. It is completely absent. And because this is gas under the same external pressure, therefore emissivity would grow enormously, because density will grow if temperature is lower, and then emissivity is going like any square. And it is absent. XMM is unable to detect this, and this was a revolution. There is continuous heating. And people are speaking about jet heating today, about how black hole is heating. You know about this. But there is second very important result in the same data, which were discussed, but now it is very interesting result. This is the chemical abundance of elements in the solar values for silicon and for iron. And you see that silicon abundance is growing from 10 arc minutes distance to 1 arc minute, practically twice. And then it drops and has minimum in the absolute central region of the galaxy, which contradicts to all old models completely. And this is great result, and you see the same is for silicon and the same is for iron. And I could show you, I think that I have some other elements, and you see here also that in the central part, even sulfur, argon, and calcium also have much smaller abundance than far enough. There are many observations of other objects. Unfortunately, XMM has not very good angular resolution. Only 15 arc seconds, and this doesn't permit in the distant clusters to resolve most central part. Therefore, for other objects, situation is not so good. But I wish to show you for one of the Abel clusters, which is much more distant than M87, the RJS reflecting grating spectrometer, this collaboration between Columbia, Steve Kahn, MPE, Achim Trumper, and also Throne, Netherlands, and Utrecht. And look for this rather distant cluster. They see neon 10 Lyman alpha line, and you see how narrow is it. They see magnesium 12 Lyman alpha, and each line is resolved, and they have this oxygen 8 Lyman alpha, hydrogen-like oxygen, and you see Lyman alpha line. And people are able to measure them. Unfortunately, they are unable. The resolution is not good enough to measure, for example, turbulence and so on. But these are lines, real lines, and we see them, and we are able to investigate what and how. And I told already to you that with Constellation X, we will get 350 times bigger collecting area. And this will be, you understand yourself, this will be different life. And if angular resolution would be a little better, it will be possible to do many additional things. I'm not speaking about Zeus, this is a huge European project, with 10-meter X-ray, 10-meter diameter X-ray mirror. I just, you know, yes. And you see, but we also think that microcalorimeters with 5 or 10 electron volt resolution will be great. And Spectrum X with Bragg, we have Bragg panel of this dimension. Everything in Russia is big. And this Bragg panel has a resolution of the order of 6 electron volts at 6.7 kV lines. For this 1,000, it's possible to measure velocities of the order of 300 kilometers per second, which is important. How we are able to explain this decrease of the abundance? There are many discussions. People are using different models of supernovae. I will tell you about a very old idea which we had with two of my undergraduate students at that time in 87, and which is very simple, and maybe it is working somewhere. I cannot say that it certainly explains situation in M87, but this is very simple effect which is working in that direction. I will speak about clusters of galaxies, and now I will speak about very simple theory. And we will work with under the model. When I have the isothermal sphere with gas, and profile is beta profile, everybody in our field is working with this, and beta in reality showing what is temperature higher than potential requires or lower, how you are in potential well, where you are, how you're feeling potential well. This beta parameter. Usually in majority of clusters, beta is of the order of 2/3 or 1. Then everybody knows about Doppler profile, and Doppler is very important. I'm speaking about temperature of ions and turbulent velocity, and therefore we are introducing turbulent Mach number. And usually this is very important for us because recent simulations of clusters of galaxies are showing that energy in turbulent motions is 15% of total energy of the cluster, thermal energy of the cluster. And 15% is a lot. This is good turbulence. Therefore, there should be velocities, and it's possible to measure them. Therefore, we are including this, and we are working now. I do not believe that turbulence is giving us equivalent of the Doppler profile. This simplification of 50s. Now we are working, trying to do this for normal turbulence, what will be the widths of the lines, and so on. But just for simplification, let us assume that it's Doppler profile. I will speak a lot about Lyman alpha line of hydrogen-like iron, energy 6.97 kV. this one electron around, and it's a beautiful problem. I will speak today a lot, maybe, about hydrogen-like and helium-like atoms. And I remember Lev Okun was giving us lectures when I was an undergraduate student, and he always was asking me, for example, what is the velocity of electron in the Bohr atom? And if you are a real physicist, you must immediately answer alpha c. I was immediately telling, oh, I can compute. He told, no. Physicists know that it's alpha c. And here it is beautiful, because in a hydrogen-like iron atom, the velocity is 26 times alpha c. And therefore, a lot of relativistic corrections are there, and so on. This beautiful problem, and this is the energy. And this is full half maximum of the Doppler distribution, and this is at least 6 electron volts. And you see that natural width is only 0.2 electron volts. Therefore, let us forget about Lorentz profile, about Voigt profile. It's just simple Doppler. And work with it. Then there is resonant scattering cross-section. Everybody knows this. Just in the resonant, in the middle of the line, this is a cross-section, and this is a cross-section in the center of the line. Everybody knows constants. Here, it is just for, I think that everybody who is faculty was giving lectures about this and remember this simple formula. And there is, for beta profile, it's easy to compute what is the central optical depth. And if you take normal permitted line of iron of any abundant element, optical depth is always of the order of 1 for rich cluster of galaxies. And this is very important because clusters of galaxies are relatively optically thick. We used in all these computations Monte Carlo because it's a case when optical depth is 1. If it is 20, it's easy to write integral equation and give the solution. If it is optically thin, it's again easy. But the case of 1, 2, it's most difficult case. And it's possible to find what is the surface brightness profile I am writing here. But for me, it's important that optical depth depends rather strongly on Mach number. And this is a unique way just immediately to measure using optical depths, to measure measuring integral properties, not spectrum, to measure turbulent velocities in clusters of galaxies. We have not too many ways to measure them. In 82, I computed what will be very simple problem, what will be the distribution of brightness in the cluster of galaxies if I have QSO, quasar, in the center of cluster of galaxies. And you know there are many now, for example, most powerful radio galaxy now we see, Cygnus A, and around is rich cluster of galaxies. Chandra is observing it. And this is how the reflected component brightness will go with projected distance divided to the core radius. And this is how polarization of scattered light will behave. It is simple Thompson scattering. It's very easy to find what is the polarization. Everybody knows when scattering is to 90 degrees and polarization is 100%, and it's just scattered light. Therefore, close to the source, polarization degree is 33%, at infinity it is 66%. Very simple prediction. Very simple. It's therefore, if you are able to cover central, like coronagraph, central quasar, and observe this scattered light in radio, in X-rays, in optics, you will get this polarization. But this is optically thin case because Thompson scattering is negligible. But when we go to the case, it's again data from Boehringer, but we computed this much earlier. He used our data, and this is different lines, permitted lines of different elements, and optical depths. And you see that optical depth for many lines is 6, 3, 2, and so on. It is optically thick case for the resonance scattering. And second part, I was speaking to you about the scattering on the resonance scattering in the lines. But there is also scattering on the free electrons. And because he is Omer Bless, I will show the formula, the kernel of the Companeyed equation. We just, during maybe 20 years, Zeldovich asked me to find what is the kernel of Companeyed equation. And I was able to find it only for the case of very high temperatures. Just we were making, it's very simple problem, but we were unable to find what is the kernel of this integral equation, which describes the quantization. And a year ago, one of my, at the time, graduate students, Sazonov, with him, we were able to solve this problem, and this is this kernel, which is function of only one parameter, which is delta equal just Doppler profile, nu strich minus nu, nu strich plus nu. And then everything is just, this is Gaussian integral practically, and this is Gaussian function. And this is the kernel. It's exact. It's exact, and it is just gives us, it is exact kernel for a Companeyed equation. Immediately using it and Fokker-Planck expansion, you see here, Fokker-Planck expansion, you were just two first moments, and you are getting Companeyed equation immediately. Just using this and computing two first moments. It's working absolutely perfectly up to 10 keV, and we gave next correction, which works up to 35 keV temperature. But for example, for all things connected, all relativistic corrections is possible to use here. This is not, maybe this is not great science, because we know that Companeyed equation is correct and everything is good, you know. But Zeldovich 20 years was pushing me to do this, I was unable. Now we did this and we are very happy. And I will show you how. He left us. I cannot report him, unfortunately. Maybe on the sky, he's also thinking that everything is okay now, people are continuing. But he usually was very unhappy when any problem is solved up to the end, you know, then its life is not so interesting. He always was telling me that it's very difficult to enter the field when only first 10% of the science are built, because it's really tough, you do not understand what to do. Great to come exactly when 10% is well known, and work hard to do 90%. Then say goodbye, other people will do in maybe tens of years. And I'm doing this now slowly. You see here, this is the line, and you see how quantization works if temperature is zero on the recoil. If temperature is low, you see the recoil is important. If temperature is 250, 1 keV. And this Companeyed equation has everything, and it's extremely useful. You see here, this is the data for different temperatures. This is the slope of it. This is 6.7 keV line scattered on the plasma with temperature 5 keV. And it is Monte Carlo plus this thing, and it is good. Now let us return to scattering in the resonant lines. What we did in 87 with two undergraduate students, we showed very simple thing. If I have scattering, this is tau zero. It is just the distribution of the brightness intensity when projected distance divided to core radius from center of the cluster up to 5 projected radii. And therefore, this is tau equals zero is in the line is undisturbed, tau 1, tau 5, tau 30. You see that in the center, the brightness of the line is decreasing, and here it is increasing. In reality, this at projected distance 10 core radii, you see, and this tau, it is 1 at optical depth 0, and it goes up to 3 at the distance 10. and it drops in the center of the cluster, it drops with tau rather rapidly. And this is just result because in the center you are scattering, and then, or you are absorbed emission from the center, and it's rescattered by the region which is very distant. And because scattering is proportional to linear power of NE, therefore you are able to scatter at large distances. But production of photons is proportional to NE square, therefore all production is going in central part, but you are scattering by periphery, therefore you are decreasing intensity in the center and increasing it, as you see here, increasing it at the high distance. And this is great because immediately if we really will be measuring this in any line, this gives us possibility to measure, to find in reality using continuum this Hubble constant. It's absolutely the same as people are doing, as you are trying to do in CMB. No difference, but with X-ray line. And this new additional method to measure Hubble constant. Therefore, people are excited. I know Julian Krolik was trying to do this. Sarrazin was trying to convince people to observe this.
Rashid, can I ask?
Yes, please.
For narrow lines in other contexts where I've seen, it's the diffusion in frequency space is more important than...
I will show you the diffusion in frequency space, but here, this is the case because it's very simple problem, spherical, symmetric, and so on. The change of brightness is extremely important also. You decrease brightness, observed brightness in the center, and you increase brightness at high distances if optical depth is large. And this is very interesting, and this is obvious. Question is how to resolve permitted line and not to take intercombinational line and not to take forbidden line, because all of them are present there. But it's simple spectroscopy, and with present day resolution, with 5 eV on iron line complex, it's very easy. You know this. Let's go further. It's very old stuff. It was written when it was absolutely impossible to measure any width of the line, when proportional cameras had 16% resolution. And now we are dreaming about resolution 0.1% in a few years. And 1% we have already. And this is just analytical formula. It's very simple to integration equivalent with given tau. Equivalent width for tau equals zero, and this is projected distance. And you see, because it's two, it's negative in the central part. And when rho is high, you have plus. Very, very simple formula. And you see the picture from old paper, tau equals one, how it goes, and tau equals 3.5, 2, 5, 30. And you see the increase here 4 times. At large distances and decrease 3 times. It's not very high effect. It is 3 times you are changing observed abundance 3 times. And it's practically what is observed in M87. Question is, are there other reasons or not? I don't know, is it necessary to repeat this is again, similar things for dependence of the beta, how extended is the cluster, but I think it's secondary things. Now you asked me about the diffusion in frequency. This single or few scatterings. Nevertheless, for I think this is optical depth of the order of 10, and I practically have, and this is a frequency shift divided to Doppler shift. And as usual, as in the solar chromosphere, if you observe Lyman alpha, you do not see anything in the center, and then you have two Doppler humps, which are shifted to half an angstrom for Lyman alpha line. It's absolutely the same here. You will get minimum in the center, and you will get 1.25 Doppler shifts, you will get maximum. But I think it's for person like Ivanov, for example, or for Chandrasekhar, this was obvious immediately. Yes, please.
But you have questions,
okay?
But if you didn't know about this physics and you try to get the temperature from the line width,
Yes?
You get the wrong answer.
Yes, I will.
Not.
Yes, yes, yes. You are completely right.
So is the
yes.
that you claim for some turbulence from the line?
No. I think that if I have turbulence, this turbulence situation is very different. Iron atom is 56 times more heavy than protons. Therefore, if protons are moving in this plasma with velocity, sound velocity, then iron atoms are moving with velocity 0.1. Therefore, if I have turbulence, which is 0.2 or 0.4, for 15% it's 0.4, then I have much broader lines and everything is different. You understand me? Therefore, I am telling that integral effect decreases, and this will give me immediately information about turbulence. Just integral numbers. It is, I don't need even resolution for this. Yes. Now let us speak about polarization. There is, at least I see one person who is measuring polarization in the room, therefore let us speak about X-ray polarization in the lines. And it's nice to remember what I was learning when I was very young. And this, according to quantum mechanics, resonance scattering can be represented as a combination of two processes, isotropic scattering and dipole, which has relay scattering function. And it depends only on J for the transition, J of the lowest level, and delta J. You know, the J is the total angular momentum. Yes, how? Not angular, how? Total momentum. Yes, because I am forced to translate everything from Russian, and it is, I even don't know what are proper words in English. Nobody gave me course of quantum mechanics in English. The first component introduces no polarization. This is spherical scattering. Everybody knows this. It's very easy to make integration and to check this. And everybody knows that second is exactly the same case as Thomson scattering on free electron. No difference. Therefore, it is easy to compute, and there are weights W1 and W2, their function of the total angular momentum, delta J, and we know this. Everything is in the tables in reality. Single scattering approximation, I have intensity B0 plus B in, which is coming to my beam, and B out, which is scattered out, as usual. You take Chandrasekhar book and you will find everything. For a given projected point, rho, we need to integrate the scattered emission over all positions. And we found this for isotropic scattering, for dipole scattering. And most important for me is Q. In reality, everybody knows who is working with polarization. In this system, due to the symmetry of the problem, only one polarization is possible. It's perpendicular to the radius. Therefore, I need only two Stokes parameters, and this is Q and B, nothing else. Therefore, I am putting this, and I know the result. B was computed many times. It's very simple analytical problem. It's easy to do this. It's nice when problem is analytical, because everything what I will show you pictures, it's Monte Carlo. But in the beginning, when we were doing Monte Carlo, I was working with great person, Ilya Sobol, Ilya Marevich Sobol, who was best person in Monte Carlo in Russia. But he always told me, it's first what you need to do with Monte Carlo. This is to compute for a situation where you know analytical solution. Then you are safe and go further. Yes, and therefore we did all this analytical solution. What I will show you, what is important for me, there are very simple asymptotics at large distances. For example, here, when distance is large, I immediately will tell you that lines at large distances for beta equal to third should be polarized as 0.20 multiplied to tau zero. And this formula is valid for tau larger than one. Here, in the case of beta equal 1, it is 0.1 tau rho, where again tau is possible that tau is bigger than 1. Now the results about polarization. And I told you that this is a question from Enrico Costa and Herb Schnopper and other people who are working now on this polarizer, X-ray polarizer. They asked me, please show that it's important somewhere. If optical depth, this is degree of polarization as function of the projected distance. And you see for tau z equals 16, we are going polarization is higher than 40% in the line. And for them, this is a lot. For tau equal 4, it is 0.3. For tau equal 1, it is 15%. For tau 0.5, some lines which, for example, intercombination line in the helium, the transition from 2 to 3p, you know, to 3p level in the helium atom, but in the helium-like iron to 1s, oscillator strength is only 10 times smaller than the 2-1p, 1s. For normal helium, it is, I don't know, maybe 15 orders of magnitude. But due to the relativistic corrections here, you are taking out degeneracy is going out, and you finally are getting only 10% smaller optical depths. And then you are in this case, if the line is, for example, permitted line is here, then intercombination line is here, but you still have, for example, 8% polarization in that line. You see here, beta equal 1, everything the same, but polarization is even higher. Here it is 60% because you have more matter in different places. This case now where Q and B computed separately for different optical depths. And it's also now in AstroPH. I don't like to show this more. I will just show you examples where we really see something important. First, let us assume that there is QSO in the center of cluster. And we are observing scattered emission in the lines. What will be in this case? If QSO is much brighter than cluster, L beta is a cluster luminosity in the line, and L, this is a scattered resonance scattering in the line from the QSO, then polarization is, for this model, 50%. If it is only 5 times difference, it is 40%. If QSO, contribution of QSO into the line, scattered line, is less than cluster, it is, you see here, 20%, and this is only cluster, no QSO. It is of the order of 5%. And it's interesting to see this. It's also the way to see is there a central source or was there a central source in the time which is necessary for propagation of the light, which is maybe 100,000 years for the typical cluster of galaxy. Now about optical depths. This is table for the coma cluster, the best lines. You see this line, this is L-shell line, zero, no any contribution to polarization. This line, 0.5 probability of the dipole component. This is helium-like, 100%. You see here, for this line, it's zero, and for this line, it's 0.5. We know every line and what is the probability of dipole scattering. This for Perseus cluster, and for Perseus cluster, you see again, helium-like line is the best, and this I think K beta, alignment beta. Also, it's very good. And optical depth is 3.3. Here it is in coma, it's smaller, but here it is 3.3, 1.6, 0.5. And what is the polarization degree? This is again for you, Lars, about the Mach number. If I have Mach number zero, this is the degree of polarization in the 6.7 keV line for the coma cluster. If there is Mach number 0.2, and you know there was merging, then it is much smaller, and for Mach 0.4, it is even smaller. Therefore, just measuring polarization, it's possible to measure immediately what is the turbulent velocity. when I know from the continuum other things. Now this is result for Perseus cluster. And for Perseus cluster, 10% in helium-like line, and these are Lyman-Betta line, and this is L-shell line. And he is only few percent. But they are able to do this, it seems. M87 situation is much better. Look how many lines and optical depths, 3.3, 2.3, 6.2, 3.2, many, many lines. And M87 is really the best target. It's possible, and it's only lines with tau higher than 0.5. And if I go to tau 0.3, it will be three times bigger table. And this is the degree of polarization. L-shell line, 13%, silicon, 6%, it's again L-shell, you see L-shell, but you see absolutely different things, and this 6.7 keV, temperature is too low, therefore optical depth is not high enough. Coma cluster is much better. It was very interesting for us in this Monte Carlo, what will be in the different parts of the curve. Practically no difference, 1%. This exact computation, Monte Carlo. I don't think this conclusion. I will go to more interesting subject in a moment. The expected degree of polarization, or do I have, yes, I have a few minutes. The expected degree of polarization for the brightest X-ray lines from clusters of galaxies is of the order of 10%. The degree of polarization is a function of projected distance. Vector is perpendicular to the radius. The integrated X-ray flux from the whole cluster is unpolarized. It's obviously, it's necessary to resolve it. The largest signal to noise ratio is achieved for rho of the order of 3.5. Rich regular clusters and clusters with a dominant cooling flow are the best targets for future polarimetric observations. Now I wish to go to completely different subject, which is very close in reality. And I had at Caltech very interesting conversation with Tony Ridhead and Brian Masson. And they told me that they are now involved in the production of huge array of bolometers for GBT, 100 meter telescope in Green Bank. And Green Bank telescope will be sensitive up to 3 millimeters. And Green Bank telescope will have this, you were absent when I was telling to Phil Lubin about this. This will be one wafer and on it array of bolometers. What they are doing now. And Tony Ridhead told me that this will be great thing. And then I told him, why you are not observing line, 3.07 millimeter line, for iron 57. You all heard many times about 21 centimeter line of neutral hydrogen. But every hydrogen-like or lithium-like atom or sodium-like atom, ion, will get also some equivalent of the line if spin is not zero of the nucleus, if there is magnetic momentum, and if everything is okay. Therefore, with Eugene Churazov in 84, I think, we computed the least, but I could quote that first was Fermi who wrote this splitting, hyperfine splitting, and then this is the line, and you could see now what is the momentum, and this momenta, and Z cube, it's most important. If Z is high, then lambda is going down. Therefore, this is for alkali atoms. It is another approximation. We computed this using the formulae from Sobelman book, and also we computed what is the probability of transition. And this probability is always because lambda is smaller, therefore probability of transition is much, much higher than probability of transition in the hydrogen atom. And therefore it is possible to observe even much less abundant elements. What we did after that, this is a table of all lines which are interesting. It's a lot, but I will show for you, if I will find pen, the most exciting lines. And most exciting line is this line of iron. It is not normal iron, because normal iron, iron 56, has zero spin. It's nucleus without spin, therefore it hasn't line. But my wife is a medical doctor, and once I read in her book that there is that medical people are using a lot iron 57, because in my blood and in your blood, 2.2% of all iron is iron 57, and we were measuring during supernova 87A explosion the special lines from iron 57 to measure its abundance, that it is less than 3%. It's again the same as in our blood. It's just what is produced when the stars are dying. And this line, for hydrogen-like iron, it is 348 microns. It is very bad band. It will be possible to observe only from ALMA site, from Atacama Desert, with rather soon. But if I go to quasars with redshift 6.2, then this line is shifted 7 times. And it's coming to me as 2 millimeter line. And it's possible to observe already with GBT and with many other instruments immediately from that quasars in absorption. But much more interesting is lithium-like line. And this is this 3.07 millimeters. And 3.07 millimeter is possible to observe from any cluster of galaxies. You are able to observe lithium-like iron and measure the velocities with radio. It's easy to measure Doppler shift and so on. And intensity in the line corresponds to 1 mK or 700 microkelvin. You know, feel better, but Tony Reed had told me it's very interesting. We dream, he told me, to measure for continuum 1 microkelvin. And for lines, it will be 30 or 50. Therefore, it is maybe 10 sigma or more. Therefore, I was very interested in this, and I'm showing you because I know that you have similar technique. You are also working with bolometers and so on. Yes?
So, in 1 millikelvin, assumes what column depth?
It is column density. It is just Perseus cluster. Perseus cluster, which is bright here, central optical depth, is central optical depth in iron of Perseus cluster. And there were at least 3 people who were trying to capture me, you know, my hand. And Saracen finally got factor 2 lower. It's okay. For me, you know, I have nothing against factor 2. You understand me? And Japanese were making computations, but a recent paper is from Saracen, and it's practically the same. Now, second extremely interesting line is nitrogen. And nitrogen is great because nitrogen, this is, nitrogen is the only abundant element which has spin and which has magnetic momentum, and therefore it has line, and this is a wavelength of the line. It is 5.6 millimeters. 5.6 millimeters is awful wavelength because atmosphere doesn't permit us to observe it. But if we go to redshift 0.3 or 0.4, it's already 8 millimeter band, which is excellent for any site in the world, and it is possible now we are speaking, you know, that Chen and Stryker are telling that there is a lot of warm intergalactic gas in the filaments. And if you are observing filaments, you have 10 in power 15 column density hydrogen protons per line of sight. And this is enough to make this line observable in absorption in the spectrum of any radio source. Bright 1,000 radio sources have enough temperature to be observed with ALMA future Alpha-beta interferometer. Therefore, we are speaking about this, but there are even more beautiful things. For example, I don't know how good is it, but there is cobalt line, which is also rather abundant. Line has wavelength 10.5 microns. And this is practically the same what neon has, neon 2 line. This line will be weaker. But even from the galactic center, plasma, where there is hot plasma, it will be maybe possible to observe this line. I don't like to show you the ionization degree. I think today everybody is able to find what is the temperature, at what temperature and so on, where to observe this. I would prefer to finish today my talk with picture which I like maybe more than anything else. And this is picture how cluster of galaxies will be polarized depending on the place where it is situated on the sky. And it will be polarized just because we have quadrupole component in the CMB angular distribution. You know that Kobe measured it. And because there is quadrupole component, scattering on the gas in the cluster of galaxy will immediately give you polarization of CMB in that direction. It is not very big effect, and depending where you're observing relation to the quadrupole axis, there are maxima of quadrupole here and here, and minimum in these two directions. But what is important, that maximum is very broad. There are two maxima, very broad maxima, and thousands of clusters of galaxies in the Planck maps will get the same polarization. Therefore, if you will add signal from all clusters of galaxies, you will get square root of n, and this may be 10,000 clusters or 40,000 clusters they dream with Planck to observe. You will get amplification of this polarized signal 100 times. And this is very interesting, and this is interesting because you are able to do such measurements for clusters at different redshifts. Everything is okay for clusters which are around us, because we know, we measure directly what is a quadrupole component. But for example, at redshift 0.3 or 0.5, quadrupole component should be different. We cannot measure, we cannot send our spacecraft to redshift 0.3 to measure something there. Therefore, this only way to measure with this maybe 100 cluster, it's possible to measure what is the cosmic variance, what is the polarization, what is the quadrupole component in the microwave background distribution there. And this unique way to measure these things, and I think that this is exciting. And when I see the people who are observing clusters here in Santa Barbara, I decided that in reality this polarization is maybe even more exciting than polarization of X-ray lines. Please, Phil.
This depends on understanding the optical depth of scattering in a cluster, yes?
Yes. Yeah. Only on optical, it's proportional to optical depths of scattering clusters, 0.1, optical depths of scattering clusters, and amplitude of quadrupole. It's not big effect, but if you have hundreds of clusters, they depending on the direction of, in reality, you are measuring axis of quadrupole. In this direction and in this direction, there will be no polarization. But in this direction and in this direction, there will be polarization. And therefore, you are able to find what are the axes in reality of quadrupole at different redshifts. In principle, you could measure this at redshift 2, if there will be enough clusters. And this is unique possibility to play with cosmic variance, you understand me, in the bigger scales, which you never will see, you never will be able to measure by any different way. Okay? Yes, thank you very much. It's 1 hour.
Question?
There were enough questions during the talk, okay?
I want to talk about the discussion of dependence on optical depth. So, I'm wondering if you can sort out the dependence on optical depth by any means, otherwise, you'll have to try to disentangle that effect from evolutionary effects in the cluster.
I think that you could measure this, for example, at small redshifts up to redshift 0.2, 2.3. Everything, I think that practically everything could be measured by Planck. Why? Planck will measure just thermal effect. This is thermal effect, is optical depth multiplied to temperature. If cluster is bright, Planck, using the relativistic correction, could immediately measure temperature for most hot clusters. If cluster is, has temperature higher than 6, 7 keV or 5 keV, it's possible to measure temperature. Now many people are speaking about this. Question is how strong is signal, how long Planck will operate in reality. Therefore, you could measure for majority of clusters, you could measure immediately temperature and tau independently. Then you are measuring polarization, and polarization, you know tau, you know quadrupole, in principle. But I know that life is much more complicated than, you know, simple theory. I haven't with me slide which I like. Situation is the following, that CMB effects do not depend on redshift, you know this practically, if you have good resolution. And X-ray drop very, very fast. And for example, clusters, which is rather easy to observe today at redshift 0.8, and they are as bright as nearby in CMB. But when you're observing an X-ray, they are at the limit of sensitivity. For Chandra, it's impossible. They are at the limit of sensitivity of XMM. But if there will be now, you know, I'm in the panel, which is also discussing this, John Carlstrom and Lyman Page proposals. I thought I'm unable to go to panel, therefore I'm free to speak about this. I cannot participate due to the visa problem. Therefore, situation is extremely simple. People wish to see, to look the blank sky and to look for many clusters at high redshifts. You know this. And GBT, what Tony Ritchett dreams now, that with that, this power of GBT, he will be able to measure fluctuations of microwave background up to L 15,000, 20,000. And at the same time, this will be blank sky survey, and they will find a lot of clusters at high redshifts if they are there. But again, nobody dreamed. I remember when all quasars, when I was, as majority of graduate students in the room, Burbidge and other people told that universe practically no one quasar at redshift higher than 2. You know, all. There were maybe 50 QSO at redshift 2 and no one with higher redshift. Now we know at least 5 at redshift close to 6. Maybe something will come.
Yeah, I was wondering if you think in terms of keeping the gas in the center of the cluster at 1 or more keV, if conduction has a role.
Yes. I always believed that conduction is great, and therefore I thought before cooling flow, I thought that conduction never will permit cooling flow, and I was wrong. And situation is extremely simple. Today, when people observe Faraday rotation in the direction to clusters, everywhere we see magnetic fields. And these magnetic fields, question is, what is the scale of this magnetic field? But they are everywhere, and nobody is even speaking now about such magnetic fields as 10 power minus 9. I saw this upper limit. They're speaking about 10 power minus 7, 10 power minus 6 Gauss, everywhere. And people now are speaking everywhere. I was working with Aldovich on these shocks in the pancakes. You maybe know this. Now, if you will speak with Roger Blanford, I came, we are doing also acceleration of particles there, but I am modest. I think that only 5 or 10% of energy of intergalactic shocks is going into the cosmic rays. Roger thinks, why not 50, why not 90? You know, this is a great revolution. People think that intergalactic shocks are accelerating a lot of cosmic rays today, because everywhere we see magnetic field. And jets, obviously, this is a way to produce large-scale structure magnetic field in every cluster of galaxies. And we see this dead plasma. People see the remnants of all 3D galaxies in clusters of galaxies where all high energy electrons died, and they see only relativistic electrons with energies which do not radiate in our spectral band today. And Kronberg, he is great, you know, maybe in Canada, he with Thorsten Enslin in my group, they are doing tremendous works on these things. And huge maps with polarization and with Faraday rotation.
Great, let's thank Rashid one more time.
Thank you.